For not being a country, Somaliland looks an awful lot like a country. To visit this place, twice the size of Portugal on the Horn of Africa, you apply for a Somaliland visa. To buy a mango or a cup of coffee, you pay with Somaliland shillings. It has its own flag, its own president, laws, license plate, passport, police, and even military. The only thing it doesn't have is recognition. While the world is divided on the status of Taiwan, China, Israel, Palestine, and North Korea, it's in complete agreement about Somaliland. It doesn't exist. Companies don't delicately tiptoe around it with euphemisms like the region of Taiwan. They don't refer vaguely to a complex issue or delicate situation, and you won't find it on any map. All 193 members of the UN are absolutely 100% certain that this is just Somalia. Ironically, if Somaliland is the most country-like non-country, Somalia, which is widely recognized, is perhaps the least country-like country. It ranks number one on the Fragile States Index, higher than North Korea, Afghanistan, or war-torn Yemen. The government struggles to maintain control over even the capital. Outside Mogadishu, it's the lawless open ocean. If a given town hasn't been captured by militants, it might be occupied by a rival clan, or some good old-fashioned pirates. In fact, Somaliland isn't the only self-governing region. Another roughly third of the area claimed by Somalia also elects its own president, although it doesn't assert independence. In other words, the Somali national government isn't just deeply dysfunctional, it barely exists. And what little control it has over its territory, it owes to the near constant presence of UN peacekeepers. Unsurprisingly, the country sits at the bottom of nearly every international benchmark. It has the sixth lowest life expectancy, the second highest infant mortality, and a shocking 8% primary school enrollment rate. When Somalia isn't at the bottom, it's usually because the data couldn't safely be collected. Then there's Somaliland, only miles away, yet worlds apart. For the past 30 years, while violence, famine, and anarchy have consumed the South, these 6 million people have been going about their lives. They've been going to school. Universities have sprung up and enrollment is steadily rising. They've been voting in regular elections. There have been 5 presidents from 3 separate parties since 1991. And they've been running marathons and reading books. The capital city hosts an international book fair, and women are allowed to run in the annual race. The streets are safe, shopping malls have been built, and refugees flock to, not from here. Now, Somaliland is far from perfect. Like most poor countries, it suffers from corruption. The current president's term was extended by 2 years under questionable circumstances, and protests recently erupted on its eastern border. Still, it seems only fair to compare it to its neighbors. According to Freedom House, Somaliland is the second freest state within a 1,500-mile radius. A foreign observer called its 2003 elections possibly one of the most peaceful in Africa in 20 years. And in 2010, Somaliland became only the 4th state on the entire continent to experience a peaceful transfer of power from an incumbent president. More impressively, it accomplished all this entirely on its own. Without recognition, Somaliland doesn't qualify for loans. Most companies refuse to invest. And unlike its neighbors across the Gulf, it hasn't been blessed with oil or gas. Everything it has today, it built from nothing. In 1991, Somalia's dictator reduced the north to rubble, bombing nearly everything, including the very airport those planes took off from. After the dust settled, and while it remained littered with landmines, 10,000 survivors slowly rebuilt the city brick by brick. Today, the capital is home to about 1 million people. Clearly, if any place deserves the world's support, it's Somaliland. Even from a purely strategic perspective, the United States has a lot to gain. Its adventures in the Middle East have proven the danger of leaving power vacuums. And unlike Somalia, the Somaliland government patrols its coast for pirates and prosecutes terrorists. When the US pulled out of Afghanistan, Somaliland offered to host thousands of refugees fleeing the Taliban. And as countries around the world bow to Chinese pressure, Somaliland is one of a very small handful of states to maintain relations and show solidarity with Taiwan. In a region rife with instability, here lies a relative oasis of peace, democracy, and prosperity. It's principled, it's patient, and it's pro-Taiwan. Could the US ask for a better ally? Unfortunately, it's not so simple. As the creator and beneficiary of what it calls the rules-based international order, the United States does everything in its power to preserve that order. That means, for example, not going rogue and deciding on its own what is and isn't a country, and instead deferring to large multilateral organizations. In other words, someone else should decide. And that someone, in this case, is the African Union. The African Union is a bit like a larger, younger version of the European Union, and it suffers from many of the same problems. Though its goals may be noble, its actions, ultimately, are only as good as its members, each of which have their own agenda. Its constitution pledges to defend the sovereignty and territorial integrity of its members, a reasonable enough sounding principle. In practice, however, this means fiercely opposing any plea for self-determination, no matter how sympathetic. After all, creating a new country necessarily means splitting apart an existing one. This concern is especially acute in Africa, where, thanks to European imperialism, most borders are absurdly arbitrary, sometimes deliberately so. There's perhaps no better example of this than Somalia itself, which was at one point split into French, British, and Italian colonies. Over the years, large chunks of majority Somali areas were absorbed by Ethiopia, Kenya, and Djibouti. Then, what remained in 1960 was unified into a single Somalia. But this, too, made little sense. Before Europeans arrived, Somalia didn't exist as a single coherent nation. Its vast desert was home to independent nomadic clans. Unification, therefore, was not so much a return to some lost pre-European ideal, but rather the creation of a new and equally arbitrary arrangement. And this absurdity was painfully obvious from day one. Should this new country, for instance, speak English, as did British Somalia, or Italian, like the South? The British and Italians each governed their colonies very differently, which all but guaranteed conflict between the North and South in this new, fragile, and deeply divided country. Needless to say, few countries would choose to open this Pandora's box debate about the legitimacy of their borders. As a result, over the last 33 years, just two new countries have been recognized in Africa: Eritrea in 1993 and South Sudan in 2011. Both, notably, with permission from the country they broke away from, whereas Somalia is not so generous. In 2005, Somaliland applied for membership to the African Union. 19 years later, it's still waiting. It's now been functionally independent for longer than it was unified with Somalia. And yet, international recognition feels as distant a dream today as it did in 1991. That is, until now. Ethiopia is the 11th largest country in the world and the second largest in Africa. Its population of 126 million is roughly as big as Russia, Mexico, or Japan. It's also growing incredibly quickly, faster than any of the 10 largest countries and three times as fast as India. And for the first two decades of this century, the Ethiopian economy grew at an average rate of 8.8%, on pace with China and about twice the average in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, the country remains extremely poor, but its momentum was unmistakable. Ethiopia, it seemed, was following in China's footsteps, soon to become the world's factory. Then war brought everything to a standstill. Between 2020 and 22, as many as 600,000 people were killed in one of the deadliest civil wars in recent history. Millions fled their homes and entire cities were burned to the ground. But today, relative stability is returning to Ethiopia. After a long, costly, and incredibly deadly diversion, a peace agreement was signed in 2022, and Ethiopia is now ready to resume its economic takeoff. In other words, the last thing it needs is to provoke another conflict. But there's something Ethiopia needs even more, something it considers almost existential, one critical missing ingredient to realize its economic potential: the ocean. It's no secret that to escape poverty and hopefully one day become rich, Ethiopia must shift from an agricultural to a manufacturing-based economy. Like China 30 years ago, it has a boundless supply of cheap labor, labor it can use to climb the development ladder. What it desperately needs is some way to get the fruits of that labor, toys, TVs, and t-shirts, into the hands of wealthy consumers an ocean away. Your Americans, your Australians, your South Koreans. That's a problem, because Ethiopia is stuck in what its prime minister called a geographic prison. Looking at a map, it's as if its neighbors conspired to deny it access to the sea. About half of its border is within 200 miles of the ocean. It just never quite touches. And to add insult to injury, Ethiopia did have a beach before 1993, when Eritrea broke away. Ethiopia is by far the most populous of the world's 44 landlocked nations, 2.5 times larger than second place Uganda. No other country has so much untapped labor with nowhere to send it. Now, currently, its exports are shipped through Djibouti, a tiny country to its east a little smaller than Vermont. But Djibouti is acutely aware of Ethiopia's desperation and feels no shame in setting its prices accordingly. It charges a borderline extortionate $1.5 billion each year for access to its port. This fee alone generates 43% of Djibouti's GDP and amounts to 10% of Ethiopia's entire public budget. This is so profitable that if it distributed the money evenly, Djibouti could give every one of its citizens $1,400, half of its per capita GDP, each and every year. And, of course, it has the power to disconnect Ethiopia from the world at any moment. Clearly, not ideal. Now, in theory, Ethiopia could diversify its options by striking a deal with Eritrea. But it prefers to keep its northern neighbor weak and isolated. That leaves one other option: Somaliland. Unlike Eritrea, no one is concerned that Somaliland will grow too powerful. Unlike Somalia, it has a functional government. And unlike Djibouti, it can be bought relatively cheaply. Ethiopia needs a port, and Somaliland needs recognition. These are the ingredients for a deal. And that's exactly what happened. On January 1st, the two leaders signed a historic agreement. The details are still emerging, but it appears Ethiopia will get 50 years of access to a 12-mile stretch of coastline in exchange for shares in its national airline. And most importantly, recognition. By becoming the first UN member to acknowledge its existence, Ethiopia would be effectively creating a new country. What happens next is anyone's guess. On one hand, Somalia absolutely despises this development. As far as it's concerned, Somaliland is an inseparable part of its territory. By signing this agreement, it argues, Ethiopia is blatantly violating its sovereignty. On the other, Somalia is in no position to stop its much larger and stronger neighbor. There's no question that Ethiopia would prevail in a head-on confrontation. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't try. Remember, Somalia is barely holding itself together as it is. Any move to legitimize Somaliland could open the door to other parts of the country to follow. Should that happen, the complete disintegration of Somalia would be only a stone's throw away. Another, more likely scenario is that Somalia collapses from within. If it allows a foreign power, especially Ethiopia, to, in its words, steal part of its territory, militant groups could exploit this weakness to rally opposition against the government. This potential for instability is the reason why countries from the United States to Egypt have condemned the deal, even while some may support Somaliland's cause in principle. Simply put, there's no shortage of ways this could end badly. After all, we need only look less than 2 years in the past to see what the Ethiopian government is capable of. The Tigray War remains, even after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the most deadly war this century. But because of Russia's invasion, along with the pandemic, few of us know anything about this incredibly consequential war. Luckily for you and I, Real Life Lore has compiled the how, where, and why into this captivating 35-minute mini-documentary explaining the war from start to finish. This is just one of about 30 deep dive episodes in Modern Conflicts, an ongoing series about recent wars, from Israel and Gaza to the Korean Peninsula. Modern Conflicts, along with my series about how China works called China Actually, and dozens of others, are only available on today's sponsor, Nebula. Nebula is the streaming platform created by myself, Real Life Lore, Wendover Productions, and many more of your favorite educational channels. If you like learning from videos like these, Nebula is really the best place to watch them. Each one begins and ends exactly as intended, with a satisfying conclusion rather than this ad you're hearing now. Plus, many videos are available early. You can sign up to Nebula for 40% off using my link in the description or on screen now. That's just $2.50 per month for an entire streaming service.